So we'll come to this last part. Just few questions. We'll try to be brief, just to touch the essence. So one of the questions is physical consciousness. What is it, and how to address it? So very simply, we can look at it. Any form, when we look at it, it has a physical dimension. It has a energy dimension and it has a consciousness dimension. Let's take a very concrete example. When we look at a mountain, so it has a physical form. By physical dimension means there is a form. Then there is the energy of the mountains. People can feel it. It's equally energy of the sea. And it has a certain effect on us. And then about consciousness, what is it that the mountains bring into us in terms of what change it creates within us? So when we look at a mountain, the sense of solidity, strength, achal, stability, but also climbing to the sky, steady. So all these are qualities, but qualities of what? Of the consciousness that has become this mountain. And because of this qualities, we see that there is a certain kind of energy in the mountains. The same applies to ocean, river, every physical object. So same way, every physical thing, including, you know, human body, has its own energy, has its own consciousness. And in that again, each layer has its own, you know, we can differentiate the vital being and mental being. So consciousness of the body is basically meant to provide stability, a common ground, but also inertia. It is obscure. So its typical sign is when we take a dip into the physical consciousness, we feel sleepy, we feel lethargic. But also this is required, as I said, because it provides a background of stability. It is the tamas which is important. Its basic consciousness is tamasic. It doesn't allow us to move readily. So this physical consciousness, if it remains what it is, obviously it cannot become the true vehicle for the divine energy to act, divine power to act. So this consciousness must release from itself its original quality. So what is the original quality behind this inertia? It is peace. So this is the original quality. The divine quality which has gone into the consciousness of matter is essentially peace. And this peace is so tremendous that it doesn't allow it to move forward. It has become obscurity because it doesn't change. It has undergone a kind of reverse, or a limitation. So to release this peace, this self-existent sat, if we like, in the physical consciousness, it is important to engage in physical culture. It awakens the body consciousness. Ordinarily, let's say in a child, there is this physical consciousness which automatically, accepts and repels what is harmful or what is helpful to the body. Children have this instinctive understanding. But as the body grows, it is spoiled by the mind, spoiled by the parents' idea, habits, vital. All this happens. So at the end of the day, it physical consciousness becomes just a docile instrument for anything to move it. It is docile. By its nature, it is docile. It's like a stone. You can use it to carve a Deva Murti. You can use it to throw on somebody. So physical consciousness is by its nature, it appears as a dull, obscure consciousness. And when we identify with it, इसको कहा गया ना जड़. सो वेन वी आइडेंटिफाई इट विद इट, देन व्हाट हैपेंस? जड़ मति, जड़ बुद्धि, जड़ता, विच मीन्स इनेबिलिटी टू मूव, टू प्रोग्रेस. इट रिमेन्स वेयर इट इज. सो इसको जगाने जरूरी है, बिकॉज इफ इट डजेंट वेक अप, इट डजेंट बिकम अवेयर, देन हाउ विल इट प्रोग्रेस? सो दैट्स वाई फिजिकल कल्चर इज टू अवेकन द फिजिकल कॉन्शियसनेस. हाउ डज इट हैपन? By certain exercises, by engaging it in its own, certain, let's say, exercises. the physical body itself begins to become more conscious, more aware. And that's what is important. Otherwise, it readily admits all kinds of vibrations, including vibrations of illness, especially when it grows up. Fear goes into it. So not only it accepts vibrations of illness, it shrinks under the pressure. It takes it that now I am going to die. It's a serious disease. So physical culture is a means to awaken the physical consciousness from its state of total obscurity and jarta and andhata to something which will be open and receptive to the higher forces. It's part of the program. Occult is whole world. Occult is basically the forces that operate from behind. From behind means forces which we don't know and yet they are operative in the world. So in a certain sense, science itself is a discovery of the occult. But it discovered the occult at one level. For instance, we are healthy, we go through some place or somebody's house or some market and we fall ill. So what is happening? Because in the occult atmosphere, there may be ill will, there may be or one simple example of occult is we go to market with a friend. We just are accompanying a friend who wants to go to the market. And never go to market with a friend carrying purse in the pocket. Okay, this is one simple advice. Because when you go there, you are suddenly seized with buying something. Unless one is inwardly developed and strong. So why this happens? We never thought about it. Because that the atmosphere in that place of desires, they are floating, floating, floating. The moment we go there, it says, here is somebody. Enters. And then we want to start with window shopping and we end up with pocket losing. Okay, so this is one example of occult. People have certain ill will and that gets translated in the body as illnesses. So the occult includes all these dimensions. Our human will, one of the examples is thought transmission. We don't understand that thoughts are also like contagion, which spreads into others. Good thought and bad thought. And that's why it is so important to be careful about one's company. All these things are well known in ancient tradition. We have forgotten about it. So what kind of company we keep, what kind of atmosphere. Nowadays, there is a term hangout. So with whom one is hanging out? Where one is hanging out? Because that atmosphere, one another common example is you're watching a television. Try this once. So there is a image coming. So the image may be of whatever, you know, scary something or just simply some song, whatever the image is. It is affecting us in some way. Is it true or not? How it is affecting? Try to use the mind to say, अरे ये तो छोटा सा ये तो image है, ये छोटा सा एक form है, form भी नहीं है, image है. Try to see, it still affects. I have done this experiment. In fact, there is a word called caging effect. So it has been studied that if within 6 feet of an image you are there, it affects you very strongly. There is a kind of radiation, there is a kind of projection. Right now we were watching television, no? On the screen we were watching Mother's Darshan. Why does it affect? Even if you think it's nothing but just an image which is being projected, we might as well, some people will say, isme kya hai, ye to real nahi hai. Screen hoga wo. Lekin phir bhi, because there are vibrations which are constantly projecting and we live in a swarm of vibrations of all kind. That's why it has been advised in all mystic lore. For instance, Guru Nanak ji says that sadho man ka man tyago kam krodh sangati durjan ki taase ahnish bhago. Because everybody is a hub of vibrations, receiver and transmitter. So occultism, understand this in great detail. A kind of occultism is, as I said, every day happening in life. Only we don't understand it. But the occultist understands, practices mastering these energies and consciously use it. use it or misuse it. So there are occultists, these black magic and white magic. So in black magic, they use all these dark energy and the beings behind it. Wherever there is consciousness, there is also a being. So they use these beings, they master these beings by certain kind of practices, and they misuse it. And or you can equally master benevolent beings, like godly beings. And then these beings help us in the process. For a spiritual seeker, it's not needed, because you are walking with the master, the supreme. So aapko kuch sochne ki karne ki zarurat nahi hai. Aap you can ask.
The question related to occult is that we learn that the mother in her younger days.
Yes, of course. She learned all these things. The mother's occult side, she was a master of master occultists. She could separate 12 bodies, not just 5-7 bodies, 12 bodies. She could die physically and come back. And all the forces she would meet, the asuras, the rakshasas, the gods, all these beings would come. She at one point, she says that I have met the gods of every religion, not only Hinduism. They would come and meditate when she would sit and give meditation. The asura of falsehood, the asura of death, all these, like, that's a vast subject. The mother was not just spiritual and supramental. There is a difference between spiritual and supramental, since we are at it. So spiritual is beyond the mind, gradations of consciousness, and supramental is still beyond, which is the original creator. So that's the difference. And occult is all that is belongs to the inner world, which the senses and the mind cannot catch, but they are influenced by it. In everything there is an occult process. And she knew everything. I mean, if I go into it, I think I gave this example that Shobhinder and the mother could actually create a materialize a physical being. So I'm not going to share this story I just shared recently in Madhuvan camp. So they could materialize. Even they knew all these processes. So that's a whole story. Please read it. If you have specific question about it, I'll be happy to answer.
What you just said, let me understand. So there is no place for occult in our practice. Am I right?
I mean, occult is always there, but we don't consciously practice. Yes. Because it's not needed.
The point I'm trying to understand is, suffering, you should go to a guide.
Yes. I'll explain that. So, it's like, no place in the sense, there are some people who have a natural temperament for occult. So, just like somebody may have a natural temperament to be an artist, a painter. So, does painting have a role in spiritual life? Well, it's one of the forms through which one could manifest the divine. So, equally, those who have a temperament for occult, they can manifest the divine through occult means also. That's fine. But it's not like everybody is needed to understand and learn occult. Now, Satprem's case is different. Why Satprem was sent to this Nilkanth Shastri along with others, that's a whole story, that why he had to undergo that kind of discipline. Ultimately, he came back and came back to the mother. He understood. So, that's a different story, and best is not to get into that. But yes, an average disciple or any disciple doesn't have to learn occultism. Mother is much, I mean, everything. She is there. Asuras and devas both have occult powers. Asuras very much have occult power. That's called Asuri Maya. They have acted even in Ramayana and Mahabharata. They can feel, how do they work even in ordinary life? Suddenly they will throw doubts, they will throw depressions, fits of depression for no reason. Everything is fine.
It's not necessary for a spiritual and supramental.
No, they act just like that. They don't have to be spiritual. Vital powers. So they will throw depression, they will throw just the opposite. Lot of energy, and when we feel, I am getting supramentalized. They are throwing an idea, suggestion, and toppling the sadhana through the door of the ego. They can deceive in so many ways. All that is described in Savitri, and a sadhak can experience the contact with these energies. So they try to throw doubt, depression particularly, for no reason. Suddenly, we say, a wave of depression comes, gloom comes, suicide is direct action of these asuric beings. And that takes us to the next question, which logically comes.
How do you combat these forces?
Go beyond them, laugh at them. A spiritual being doesn't have to worry.
Not spiritual being has a family, and the family of somebody is going through depression.
So a person who is spiritually inclined can pray and invoke. If he has the power, he should be able to act upon them. But that's not easy. Then it's like opening a door of battle. And the worst is, actually, even if you were to remove, let us say, from a family member or somebody who is under the grip of these forces, it is something in the person that has opened the door. And therefore, it doesn't work. Mother would often throw away these forces, and she said he would draw it. How? Vanity. One of the biggest things which draws these forces is vanity. Lack of humility. Insincerity. Then too much of a kind of perverse sexuality. Now they are into it. Gambling. So you can't... it's not a simple problem that, even if you were to throw away, the person is drawing them. So you can only pray quietly, and he has his own journey. At some point one has to let the person go. You can give some positive forces like hope, prayer, put some music, mother's music or Sunil Das music in the atmosphere at a very sub-zero volume so that he doesn't know, otherwise he'll react. Maybe some perfumes, nice flowers, these dark forces don't like it. So some beauty, create beauty around, they don't like. They like chaos. So you'll see many of these people who develop things like, schizophrenia. They create disorder, not only inside but outside. It's very difficult. They will wear dirty clothes for a long time. They'll not take a bath. So one can try to that extent, but also use medicine, because modern medicine closes the gateways to these occult forces when they enter into the brain. So that's the level it acts. It doesn't change you. But it does block the entries of these forces through the brain gates. So it blocks the manifestation, and that gives a vantage point. So there are such ways to intervene. So part of that is the hostile forces. So in occult you have divine forces, spiritual forces of higher beings, and we also have the dark or hostile forces, adverse forces. And I said they act because there is some insincerity in the being. And so their role is basically to point out our weaknesses. Of course, they exaggerate everything. So you do a little mistake, so they characteristic action, I'll tell you. So there is, let's say, you're walking on the path and you are a very big moralist, and something happens which hurts your moral sensibility, and you feel that I have fallen. There are stories like that of King Ajax in Greek mythology, and our Shantanu goes into depression. Because you suffer guilt. Now, guilt is the action of hostile forces. Though normally we may think, yare, sabhavi ke bichare ko guilt ho raha hai. Nahin, ye hai action. Wo jo hua ho gaya. Ab guilt ke saath wo pareshan ho raha hai. Dukhi ho raha hai. Depressed ho. Film aayi thi na, Black, jisme Amitabh Bachchan suddenly developed a lot of guilt. So their characteristic action is to make you feel guilt, then unfit, then depressed, because you did some mistake. And then you suffer a lot because of that. And you ultimately think, even God will throw me out and I don't deserve the grace. These are the thoughts. Whereas one should say that, bhaiya, grace is infinite. If you fall, wake up and move again. So this is there. It's a whole world. And as I said, many of the questions we may not be able to go into detail. Please feel free to ask at askalogda. What is it? .com. .org. Okay, that's the website. Otherwise, askalogda@gmail.com. If somebody sends me, I'll send the email. So you can feel free to ask it. Because it'll be difficult to go into. Pakistan is a creation of hostile forces. Pakistan, assume in those words, it's a creation of falsehood, farce. And it will go. Yes, child, your question we must take. Right, you are ratifying? What is
it? It is correct.
Thank you for seconding me. Yes, so it has been created. Why? Because it's artificial, unnatural. A country is, you know, it's unnatural because everything is shared for millenniums. So what they did was create a very artificial kind of divide, and we know what result we are still reaping. And we are continuing to fan this, and which is so dangerous. So Sri Aurobindo said very clearly, Pakistan, the division will go, and Pakistan will become, it will break into different parts. There is a whole video on this subject, and Pakistan will eventually, different parts will seek to join with India, and it will all become one. But one as a confederation, as a federation, as a, not as like old time India. So this is very true. Pakistan doesn't exist in the spiritual realms. Many things don't exist there, but they have been, human stupidity has created it. But it cannot last beyond a point of time. Avatar. Yes, so avatar is perceived in tradition as also Sri Aurobindo's vision. So traditions means basically the Gita speaks about it, the Vishnu Puran speaks about it, the Bhagavat Puran, some of the Puranas speak about it, mainly the Bhagavat and Vishnu Puran. Well, Shiv Puran also speaks of avatar of Shiva in a certain sense. But if you look at the classic story which we all have is the Dashavatar. So Dashavatar is the parable of evolution. So you see from the fish, Matsavatar, it becomes the, you know, the avatar Kurma, which is land and sea. The Kurma changes into Varavatar, the mastery of the land. Then Vara changes into Narsingh Avatar, half animal, half human. Then the Vamana Avatar, the dwarf human. Then Parshuram, the ferocious human. Then Ram Avatar, the ferocious Rajogun is subdued by the Sattva. Then Krishna Avatar goes beyond Sattva. Very clearly we see. And the Kalki who consummates all of them. Sri Aurobindo takes the same analogy. Analogy means truth. She says the avatar has a double side. There is the outer side, the evolution of the form of matter, material life, and the collective journey of earth, as Sri Krishna puts it, the march of civilization, Lok Sangrahart, and the avatar has an inner side. The inner side is the divine. But the same divine takes, as per the requirement of the age, Yuga, he takes a form to lead that level to the next level. That's what we see in the parable of Dashavatar. If you see Parshuram and Rama, both are avatars. Avatars of Vishnu. But what a difference. So that story is a classical story where Parshuram subdues his extreme Rajogun. And Rama represents Sattugun. Now when you see Krishna and Rama, so Krishna is also avatar, Rama is also avatar. But Krishna transcends the gunas. They are all doing dharma. But a dharma which is for that particular age. So now Sri Aurobindo, in the same tradition sequence, we see Sri Aurobindo. And the classical, I have given some talks on it. Again, just taking a little shortcut on Sri Aurobindo, the Kalki avatar, Sri Aurobindo as the avatar, Rama, Krishna and Sri Aurobindo. All of these talks are available on Aroma. But so Sri Aurobindo becomes the grand culmination. So what is that? The Kalki who brings down with the sword on a white horse with a lame foot. He destroys the Mlechas and brings down the new kingdom of God on earth. Isn't it? That's what is the Kalki description. Obviously we are not imagining an actual physical white horse on which Kalki will come. So white horse is the pure force of the divine force in all its purity. That's the mother. The sword is the sword of discernment, of knowledge. Destruction of Mlecha, we know that Sri Aurobindo completely demolished the one and only avatar recently, who not only fought against the Britishers but released that tremendous energy which would demolish and throw them back. So he fits into all the criteria, Paritranay, Sadhunam, Vinashay, Chadushkitam, Second World War, he put all his force against the Axis powers. Vinashay, Dharma Sansthapnay, he gave to the world a new Dharma more consistent with the age. So this age of matter in which we live, and he reconciled material life with the spiritual. This is the dharma of the age. You cannot discard it. So dharma sansthapnaye sambhavami yoge yoge. His relationship with Krishna, identity with Krishna. I'm just running the long story short, that Shurvindo, yes, he takes that avatarhood and takes it to its logical culmination. He has only partially hinted about his own avatarhood. Mother spoke of it much more directly. Mother said that, well, Shurvindo is the last avatar in the human body. And Shurvindo was asked about the question that in this life you are an avatar, but in the previous life, what were you in previous life? Shurvindo did not deny being an avatar. He said, well, we were there as vibhutis then in previous lives. So the Nagin Doshi asked him, what were you doing in these lives as vibhutis? So he said, carrying on the evolution. So the disciple asked, what does it mean? He said, to explain it, I will have to write the whole history of the earth. So every which way, there are many very clear indicators that Sri Aurobindo is the Kalki avatar, but we don't like to say it because now there are so many Kalki avatars. And it doesn't matter. Shobindo doesn't want to create a movement of Kalki avatar and born in Sambhal, all this. He doesn't want to do that. Because his avatar comes to do a work. He's not interested whether people recognize. How many people recognize Krishna as an avatar? Just 5 persons in the time of Rama. So that's not important, because avatar at the end of the day, it's an individual revelation. If the divine wants, he will reveal his avatarhood. But yes, he does take it, and it's a very important thing, because avatar opens the way. Because each avatar opens a door through which humanity passes. But over a period of time, the truth that the avatar gave, it gets slowly, it degenerates into mere externalities, into artificiality, and its truth is lost. Only the form or the outer shell remains. So that's when the avatar comes, breaks completely what he had given, the mold, liberates the spirit and gives it a new mold consistent with the new age. We can see that with the Varna Ashram Vyavastha. Sri Krishna says that I have established the Chaturvarna. But we equally now Sri Krishna has broken it, because it became Brahmin by birth. So it lost its meaning. Brahmin became known by their pot bellies and, you know, the choti and whatever else. So it had to go because it lost its meaning. But the deeper truth of Brahminism will remain. There will always be people who are custodians of knowledge, whether you like it or not. Always there will be people who are, the truth of Brahminism is they who were custodians of knowledge. And if a society finishes them, it finishes itself. Because you can't survive without knowledge ultimately. Similarly, every society continues to have its kshatriyas. Even where one doesn't believe. Islam doesn't believe in all this. But Islam had its own kshatriyas. Most of them would obey the rule of the ego, but some of them, they were kshatriyas. Even a man like Aurangzeb said that, you know, one of my saddest wish remained unfulfilled was to face Shivaji and defeat him. It was his wish. Nahi jeet paya. To wo kshatriya bhav hai. Par wo ek dusra route le liya. Distorted ho gaya. Jyadatar kshatriyon mein ye problem hoti hai. Because the guidance of the knowledge was missing. That's why kshatra tej without brahma tej eventually dies. So one have to. So the truth will remain, but it will take a new form. Because the old form has to be destroyed. So that is how Shobindo, yes, very much he accepts, writes in great detail. There are letters on yoga, in essays on the Gita. There are 3 chapters dedicated to the possibility and purpose of avatarhood, the divine work for which the avatar comes, the process of avatarhood, all these in great detail. So it's just for referencing. Invocation and guidance. Yeah, we should, when we pray or in call the divine for guidance. So the point is that it should be to get receive divine guidance, we should be freed from these mental preferences and conventions, because we want the guidance to pour in. Many, very often I face this. People come to me as a psychiatrist, and what they are wanting is a ratification of their own idea, not wanting a guidance. I'm talking at a human level. So they will come and they will say, you know, my wife or child or this problem, that problem. So if I say, supposing that, you know, yeah, I can understand, they're very happy. They go back, very good psychiatrist. But if you say that, look here, you need to change and correct yourself. So they go elsewhere. So guidance, to get the guidance from the divine, we have to be very clear, very sincere, quiet inside, not with mental preferences. Because the divine doesn't act according to our ideas. And then we will feel, as I said, a little nudge in the heart. That is the seat of the divine where the guidance comes. Very quiet. And then it's not like a boomerang. Thou shall do this. No. Divine doesn't like to shout. His whisper is enough to move the stars. Yeah. Just as a gentle indication, a kind of sense of unease, a sense of, I can give you an image. So as if something is from within, gently nudging you in a certain direction, very gently. It's an image, but you can actually feel that image, that you are facing a dilemma, and it's like, take this road. So if you take that road, it's wonderful. We may not understand what would have been the problem if we took this road. But if you take the other road, you'll definitely discover that this was not the road I should have taken. That's how people grow into the guidance, because they realize. So one becomes more and more conscious. So a simpler way is, even if we cannot, that do your best. With the best of intention, highest available to us is discerning reason, and offer it to God. मदर समझ नहीं आ रहा आप क्या चाहते हो मेरे दिमाग में तो ये आ रहा है मैं ये करने जा रहा हूं पर अब संभाल लेना दैट वी कैन डू देन इट्स अ सेफर रूट बिकॉज टू गेट गाइडेंस ऑल्सो रिक्वायर्स अ सर्टन डिग्री ऑफ इनर क्वाइट्यूड एंड फ्रीडम फ्रॉम प्रेफरेंसेस एंड व्यू पॉइंट्स एंड ओपिनियन विच नॉट ईजी सो जस्ट ए क्वाइट Try to seek it, but at the same time act under the discerning intellect that is given to us as the second level of guiding. Discerning intellect can help us. It will show us, if you take this route, what is the likelihood. So that way it shows. It's in ignorance, but buddhi is a kind of guide. And then offer it to the divine within, that this is how my buddhi is showing me, but I don't know. But please, you be the chariot here. That's what can be done. Yeah.
My question was that you just talked about self versus so much of opposition. So if there is a beginner, someone who's starting, is it better for that person to stay in the material world or take the shelter of ashram or a hermitage to progress?
Okay. So, well, one has to, ashram is not a safety zone, that I must tell you. Hermitage is not a safety zone, because the doors to the hostile forces open from within us. So sometimes certain natures do need it because of inability to handle the world forces, which is okay, not that one has to look at it. Each one's nature is different. And so one may like to go to an ashram for that purpose, because you are a little more sheltered. But then one has to understand that one is going because one is unable to face the challenges of life. Divine can accept. Divine, all kinds of people come to the divine. But the fullness of yoga doesn't come through that. See, it is one thing to go to the divine seeking refuge from the troubles of the world, and quite another to take shelter in the divine because one wants to present oneself to be the instrument of the divine. There is a difference between the two. It's perfectly fine to seek refuge. There have been people who have gone to Mother simply because it was difficult for them to take the challenge of life, and one should not look down upon that. Well, one is what one is. But in a let us say an ashram place, certain kind of challenges are less, no doubt. But then if one has to practice yoga, the same challenges will come, inner challenges. But certain challenges are less because, well, things like stark play of ambition, race for money, all this is not there. But the challenge may come in another way. One may, after going, feel that, oh, I want some money. Why money is not being given? All these things will come up from within. But practice the yoga in the world. I feel it's a much better thing to grow strong and, you know, face the world with strength, calling the divine. I personally feel that way. But to each one, one's own destiny. Hostile forces should not be much thought about, honestly. Think about the Divine Mother. Laugh. They come. They are part of the working. Don't pay much attention to them. Just focus on the Divine Mother. That takes care of. Grow in aspiration. Don't get locked into the combat, because they are an expert at the art of illusion. If one goes and starts getting into them, then they will... And one of the safest ways not to think of oneself, honestly. Even this, that, you know, hostile force attack. The more we think of ourselves and what is happening in me, then the more they will capture us. So think of the divine. Think of, if nothing else, think of the good in the world. Do good in the world. At least I'm just saying that the less we think of ourselves, the safer we are. I mean, you have to just, of course, if there is a sudden problem, you have to take care of yourself. But beyond that, no. Cultivate humility, sincerity, a kind of vigilance that one doesn't allow ego to take over. Ambition is another very dangerous door to these forces. So just put it under moderation. Too much desire. So practice moderation. These are simple ways. And Mother's name is the ultimate remedy. Nothing can stay, nothing hostile can stay in the presence of the Divine Mother. So call Mother's name. Mother's name is the mainstay of the sadhana, including, you know, throwing away the hostiles. See, this is the story of Prahlad, isn't it? Hiranyakashipu ke paas sab hai. Lekin Prahlad ke paas Hari hai. Usko to kuch nahi maloom hai. Kya kya planning kar raha hai? पहाड़ से गिराता है, अग्नि में जला, सारे तो होस्टाइल फोर्सेस पकड़ के रखे हैं उसने, सांप काटने भेजता है, क्या नहीं करता है. प्रहलाद डजंट थिंक ऑल दैट. प्रहलाद ओनली थिंक्स ऑफ हरि 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 हरि. हरि टेक्स केयर ऑफ हिम. दिस इज अ ट्रूथ ऑफ इनर लाइफ दैट इफ यू डिपेंड ऑन द मदर, इफ यू टर्न टू द मदर, इफ यू रिलाई ऑन द मदर, इफ यू कॉल द मदर्स नेम, नथिंग कैन स्टे, नथिंग कैन हार्म. हैव फेथ. फेथ इज द ग्रेटेस्ट सिक्योरिटी. And the last question, does supramental necessary mean immortality of physical existence? Well, supramental by its nature is infinite. It cannot be destroyed. There is no pralaya there, unlike the mental world. So whatever part is touched by the supramental will become, gain immortality. And so different layers immortality exists. Physical immortality, yes, but it is the last conquest. Sri Aurobindo spoke of some 3,000 years. Mother spoke of 1,000 years. Later on, she made it 300 years because the progress of the yoga upon her. So eventually, it is bound to be. Not through medical means, though medical means will bring its own advantages, like ability to prolong life will come first. Ability to ward off illnesses by the inner will also come. Ability to die at will, iksha mrityu. All these things will come first. And then eventually the immortality of the body, which may take about few hundred years. It's bound to be. There is no other way, because supramental by its very nature, once it fills the human vessel, it will make it immortal, but not a body will not remain like this. It will change into a luminous body full of plasticity, natural spontaneous immunity. All this is for the future, but it is bound to happen. But it's the last result of the yoga. Body is the last part. So if we are expecting supramental bodies right now, we are, well, too premature looking for that. So yes.
Psychic is a kind, psychic
Psychic immortality one will get. So there are different types of immortality. That's why, because the question spoke about physical immortality. So one who lives in the psychic consciousness realizes the fundamental immortality. One is no more, death doesn't exist for such a person, because one has touched that immortal part. One knows that there is nothing like death. You are conscious in a part. It's like somebody who is aware that you are you. So you are not, you don't like the dress to be snatched away. But if the dress goes away, you don't lament ki I have gone away. If the house breaks, you know you exist, because then you have discovered the Dehi inside. There is another immortality, is the discovery of the immortal infinite consciousness. That is also possible. And in fact, even vital is immortal. It's only the body which goes through all this process. But eventually, yes, physical immortality. But psychic consciousness grants us the consciousness of immortality, because we discover that we are immortal within. But physical also has to be, because otherwise perfection of divine life cannot blossom. We can't have a vase or a pot which is so clumsy. But that's for the future. Not a distant future. I would not even say a too distant. No, it's not a distant future. If you see Earth's history, few hundred years are nothing. But a future which is also, we can see there are many indications that mankind is moving in that direction. The fact that we are imagining, we are wanting, we are trying to find ways and means is a sign. All this is a sign that this idea has got into the head. Because winding up, so we'll just take, then we'll take the winding up.
Question, I'm confused that, somehow Advaita, Shankara's Advaita is the dominant strain of philosophy that is there. So, usme, there is the stress only on the mukti, the knowledge. But in the Isha Upanishad, we have verses which talk about, the one who only goes after the ignorance.
Yes. Andam tama pravishanti ya vidyam upasate.
Yes.
So you see Shankara's bhashya on Isha Upanishad? He has means tweaked the word. Kurvan nevehe karmani jiji visha chatam samas. Shankara cannot accept it. So he tweaks the meaning of the word. Sri Aurobindo exposes it. He says he has tweaked the meaning, because Sri Aurobindo is a philologist beyond anyone. Sri Krishna gave him the Nirukta for Sanskrit, epistemology of Sanskrit language. So he says this is a tweaking. And there are people who don't accept Isha Upanishad because it contradicts. Whereas actually, if you see from that perspective, even Kain Upanishad and others which they use for saying this world is not true, you end up discovering that no, this is a misreading. So, yes, but not only Isha, I have discussed with people. They say, but Kain Upanishad, I say, no, I'll show you how Kain Upanishad speaks about this world and the conquest over this world. It's a long story, but just to say that every Upanishad, the only one where little bit doubt remains, Mundak, but even there. So, this is a Shankara stamp is very strong. That's why I keep telling, if India is going to follow Shankaracharya's Mayavad, forget about Sanatana Dharma and glory of India. So I'm very clear, don't mix the true Hinduism with this. I've seen this, people talk about Shankara, they talk about Sanatana Dharma. I am on some groups, which is very, Sanatana Dharma. But they end up with all these sadhu sannyasis, and then it's like you're yourself doing double speak. Talk about Krishna. At least one, if you don't want to understand Sri Aurobindo, at least talk about Sri Krishna. Yes, I quite agree with you. It has done much harm to India. And if people go back to that, then forget it. Forget about Sanatana Dharma. Because his logical conclusion is that you can't put Mayavad and defending the nation and all this together. You can't deny Shakti. And then you say that, we have to grow vast and mighty and creative. Forget about it. But at the end of the day, you are glorifying sannyasi. Sannyas as an individual path is fine. Everybody has a right to do that. But glorifying sannyas, we have to stop it, because if you do that, we are again opening the door to the same downfall through which India fell down post-Buddhist era. Otherwise, kisi ki himmat thi, majal thi, aankh utha ke dekh le. because of that. That we read, no, God's Leela. He veiled himself. But we should understand that's veiling. No. It did happen. Yes. Get out of it. That's what I'm saying. And as an individual, I'm fine. It's perfectly fine for an individual to practice anything, because that's what Sanatana Dharma allows. You can take sannyas, you can practice individual moksha, you can take Shankara's Advaita, it's fine. But if you make it as a national icon and something so important, that's where my problem lies. And I feel somewhere a kind of a strange symbolic coincidence, if you want to call it, that in the inauguration of the Ram temple, you see the Shankaracharyas refused to come. It's symbolic, representative gesture, which is nice in a way that, well, India began to think at least, look, is this the institution we want to take India along? So many sannyasis, and again at the end we are just going. Better to be an inner tyag in the world. That's what Sri Krishna advocates, isn't it? To be in the world yet not of the world. This kind of yogins we read in the morning, Ajatashatru, Arjun, Kartavirya, Vikramaditya, all Janak. This is the yogin required today. Yes, one last question we can take.
I hope I can visualize the supramentalization, I'm just hoping seriously that at least in the ashram there are people who will be some stage towards that. I met someone, senior father, and you were very sick. So the answer I got was probably his cells are not responding in the way they should be. I have not talked about average illness. But at that level, is that a correct way to understand?
No, I don't know what he meant. Like, is he talking of physical transformation? Physical transformation will take time and many have asked.
If the supramental is actually there, I don't know where they are. Hopefully they are close to whatever the realization. Not in the sense, but there are somewhere. So, in that process, the cells are reacting to the supramental force and therefore they are rebelling, and hence that illness or condition has come.
So that is about illness vis-a-vis the supramental transformation. That's a different subject. So when the body, the supramental consciousness acts upon the body, yes, it is true that the body may react in different ways. It may react by kind of resisting. It may not be able to open. That is true. That is one part of it. But there are other aspects also, that what really opened the doors to illness. Ideally, it should not happen. But then it happens. Also, there are sadhaks who, I don't know about this particular sadhak and advanced sadhak, senior sadhak, I don't much subscribe to that idea. But anyways, it is possible sadhaks do it, that there are sadhaks who take upon themselves the burden of others. This is a well-known thing. Mother spoke about it for Pavitrada. And I know for sure Nalida also went through that. So when they take upon themselves the burden of others, they can fall sick. So there are not one cause. There could be other causes. But yes, the resistances of the body is one of the causes. If one has not really awakened fully physical culture, then it's much easier for the higher layers to get transformed, the mind and heart. But the lower vital gives a tough fight. And then the body gives the toughest fight. So that's okay. There would be generations which will pave the way, go through that, and eventually it become easier. That's best left unsaid, because certainly Champaklalji, I can only tell you my example, though outwardly at one point he had paralysis. But I know, I have had met Champaklalji, and suddenly in a trice I suddenly felt that Champaklalji's body has vanished. It's all light. And I tried to look into his eyes, and looking at his eyes, everything vanished in me. There was only a point of which I was conscious. Nothing else. and I burst into crying at that point of time. He would not allow anybody to touch his feet, but he allowed me. My wife was also there. He allowed. And she was carrying. He didn't know anything about it. He gave her a flower rose which contained 1.5 rose. Strangely. To me, he gave one rose. And that day, we both lost our appetite and everything till evening. But I have had this kind of losing appetite and all this experience earlier also without meeting anyone when I had experienced the descent of the divine peace. But yes, those Champakalalji was in many ways living in that complete intuitive consciousness. But he was a warrior. So I guess with Champakalalji, because he was fighting on different planes, he was the lion of Durga, that's how mother put it. So possibly Champakalalji's physical illness was related more to that than to the process of resistance in the physical. He was a warrior. He took upon himself certain things, certain attacks which were coming possibly on the ashram itself, and he took it upon himself. That's how I look at it, understand it. I have reasons for that, but they are too subtle and need not go into that. So there are people who do that also. They take upon themselves the whole brunt. I believe something like this happened to Navjatji also. The Sri Aurobindo Society chairperson. So something like that happened to him also. He left his body in Delhi. Now these are things which people don't understand. So, you know, they make all kinds of stories. But there are some heroic souls, warrior souls who take upon themselves the brunt. And they do it willingly, happily, like Pavitrata himself. Mother herself told, because he had a lot of compassion. He was a Buddhist monk earlier. So he would easily take people's problems into himself. And he developed cancer and went through a lot of... But they do it. They don't look at it, oh, my cancer, oh, yeah. No, they are free. They live in that consciousness of immortality. They take it as part of their divine service. And they are happy about it because they are... Even body has been useful in some way to the divine before it falls. But yes, one of them is the resistance of the physical consciousness. Okay, so it's 6:15 as we had thought. We'll... Jema, thank you so much. And wonderful being here. Jema.